Hey guys, welcome to Tales from a Butterfly podcast. I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Sometimes caterpillar, sometimes butterfly, but always striving to make it through life's many metamorphoses with my faith intact. With this podcast, I hope to encourage anyone that is going through life situations, no matter what they are, that have left you feeling like you will forever be a caterpillar in the cocooning stage, having to continually shed your skin while fighting to get free from any chains that are holding you back from your transformation. I want to tell you, keep your faith in the transformer, believing that just like the butterfly, when you come out, you will be a thing of beauty who is not afraid to fly. So come on, my butterflies, let's fly. You're listening to episode 58 of the Tales from a Butterfly podcast, titled The Inheritance. It's yours. And I'm your host, Taria Shondell. Hey guys, thank you so much for downloading this episode. Before I go any further, I want to say that if you like the podcast, please subscribe by going to either iTunes, Blueberry, B-L-U-B-R-R-Y, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and type in Tales from a Butterfly. And if you could please leave a comment and rate the podcast, that would be a big help to me and the podcast. The more ratings I get on iTunes and Stitcher, the more visible the podcast, which in turn can bring in more sponsors. And that's really important, guys, to keep podcasting free. Also, head on over to TariaShondell.com. That's T as in Tom, A-R-I-A-S-H-O-N-D-E-L-L.com to follow my blog by the same name, Tales from a Butterfly. Okay, y'all, so let's get into it. So again, this episode title, episode 58, is The Inheritance. It's yours. And, you know, sometimes we think about inheritance just in the natural, which is, you know, a loved one of yours passes, your mother, your father passes, and they leave an inheritance, you know, for their children. There's also a spiritual inheritance that we're promised also. But sometimes with the natural and the spiritual inheritance, there's things that try to inadvertently or on purpose try to stop you from getting what's rightfully yours. And as I was thinking about the inheritance, you know, what my parents may leave for me, what I need to leave for my children, me and my husband, and what they may leave for their children and their children's children and so forth, I also started thinking about, you know, the inheritance of Christ and what he has promised us, what he's guaranteed us. And so many things throughout life try to come in and stop those things which are promised to us, those things which are guaranteed to us. And we have to learn how to speak up, stand up, and fight for what is rightfully ours. You know, it could be rightfully ours, but someone tries to block it. So do we just walk away and say, oh, okay, because we don't have the fight in us? No, because to fight, whether it be fight for our physical inheritance, and I don't mean physically, but, you know, whether it be following through on paperwork or making sure paperwork in order, or fighting for our spiritual inheritance. We can't just allow the enemy to walk away again with our inheritance and what is promised to us. So there's some women in the Bible that came to mind when I was thinking about inheritance. And they're women that aren't mentioned often, but the times that they are mentioned, it really struck a chord with me. And it was interesting to me that these women all were dealing with inheritances. One was from the inheritance of their fathers. There was five of those. And then another woman, it was the inheritance for her son. So it was just really interesting to me. And I kind of drew some parallels and I got some lessons out of those women. So I'm going to go into the first group of women that, like I said, I read their story and it really resonated with me as far as inheritance. So the daughters of Zelophehad, and disclaimer, I wasn't quite sure how to say these names, you know, these biblical names. So any biblical scholars out there or theologians, don't try to read me for my pronunciation, because my mother-in-law had a great idea and she went on the Bible app and had the Bible app read the scripture that I wanted to use aloud. And so these are the pronunciations that the Bible app used. So it's not me. It's the Bible app. Okay. Just kidding, but I'm serious. So anyway, the first group of women, the daughters of Zelophehad in Numbers chapter 27. Now, the names of these women, the daughters of Zelophehad, were Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. Now, before I go into Numbers 27, which is what I had read first, I went back and read pieces of Numbers chapter 26 because it really gives context. So let me go back to Numbers chapter 26 and read some verses. I'm going to jump around, but I'm going to list the verses, you know, that I'm jumping around to. Now, verses 1 through 6, NIV read, "After the plague, the Lord said to Moses and Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, take a census of the whole Israelite community by families, all those 20 years old or more who are able to serve in the army of Israel. So on the plains of Moab, by the Jordan, across from Jericho, Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them and said, take a census of the men 20 years old or more, as the Lord commanded Moses." Now, I'm going to skip down to verse 33. And verse 33 reads, Zelophehad, son of Hepher, had no sons. He had only daughters, whose names again were Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. Now, I'm going to jump down a little bit more to verses 52 through 56, which read, "The Lord said to Moses, the land is to be allotted to them as an inheritance based on the number of names. To a larger group, give a larger inheritance, and to a smaller group, a smaller one. Each is to receive its inheritance according to the number of those listed. Be sure that the land is distributed by lot. What each group inherits will be according to the names for its ancestral tribe. Each inheritance is to be distributed by lot among the larger and smaller groups." So just to recap that, we know that a census was taken of the men only, 20 years or older, who were able to serve in the Israel army. And then after this census is when the inheritances were to be distributed among them. So if you had a bigger family, you got a bigger inheritance. A smaller family, a smaller inheritance. Because they wanted to be fair. So again, this was distributed among the men. This is the law. This is what the Lord spoke to Moses, which had then become law. So now I want to go back to verse 33 again, and it mentions the gentleman, Zelophehad, and that he had no sons, only daughters. And if you listen back, there was no mention of them getting an inheritance because the census was only taken of the men. So now I'm going to jump to chapter 27, verses 1 through 8, which read, "The names of the daughters, again, were Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. They came forward and stood before Moses and Eleazar the priest, the leaders, and the whole assembly at the entrance of the tent meeting and said, our father died in the wilderness. He was not among Korah's followers who banded together against the Lord, but he died for his own sin and left no sons. Why should our father's name disappear from his clan because he has no son? Give us property among our father's relatives." So Moses brought their case before the Lord, and the Lord said to him, "What Zelophehad's daughters are saying is right. You must certainly give them property as an inheritance among their father's relatives and give their father's inheritance to them. Say to the Israelites, if a man dies and leaves no son, give his inheritance to his daughters." So now I was thinking about that. I'm like, imagine if your father had been killed or passed on and you were his heir, but because of the sex you were born a woman, or because of the way the people around you saw you, they discounted you as an heir. So how would you handle being excluded from what is rightfully yours? And even if what was stopping you from getting your inheritance was a law, would you be brave enough to challenge that law? You know, when the enemy tries to take what you know, what you absolutely know belongs to you? Do you sit in silence thinking you don't want to ruffle any feathers, or I don't want to make any waves, or that it's a law, so what I say doesn't really matter? Like, imagine you are due this inheritance and you're overlooked. What would you do? And what I love and find so interesting and exciting and encouraging about the lesson that I took from these five sisters is that they knew that they were the rightful heirs. They knew it. They knew that they were their father's children. And even though they were women, they were still rightful heirs, and that they weren't afraid to speak up to who they needed to speak up to. They didn't have side conversations with other women out there. Girl, can you believe that just because we're women, they didn't leave an inheritance for us? They didn't go and start conversations with the other men of the tribe and complain that it wasn't fair, you know, that they weren't getting an inheritance. They didn't go run down the situation to them. And they didn't speak negatively about the leader, Moses. Can you believe that they just overlooked us and God overlooked us and we're not getting this inheritance? They didn't do any of that, even though they knew that the inheritance was rightfully theirs. They didn't speak about it, complain about it, or mumble about it. They didn't waste words. And sometimes I find so often we'll have an issue with something and we could be right. We could be so right in what we're saying. And I had to learn that the hard way. I could be so right in what I was saying sometimes, but who was I saying it to? Was it really solving the issue? No. So these daughters, they went directly to Moses and stated the issue. And they spoke in a way that showed that they knew what they were talking about. See, they knew the law. So they were well informed and able to go and speak their case. How many times do we get upset and just throw things out there when we haven't done any research and we're not even sure about what we're talking about? But because we're right, that's all we know. We just know we're right, so it should be our way. No, these daughters spoke about the law in a way that showed they knew about it. They knew that, number one, in order for their father's name to not stop at his death, that they needed to make sure they got their inheritance. They knew that. And their inheritance was the piece of land. They also realized that the law in regard to the inheritance did not have any clauses or specify what was to happen if there were no male heirs. Again, they knew the law. So they knew that there was no clause or specification as to what would happen if a man died and didn't have any sons. So they were able to articulate this and get the result that they desired because they were well-informed and able to articulate, hold their tempers in check. They were able to get the result that they desired. And because of their willingness to be bold and speak up for what they believed in, they were able to make their mark in history for all women. I mean, think about it. Here I am talking about them on a podcast over 2,000 years later. Women that were bold enough, brave enough, classy enough to stand in front of a leader and be able to say why they were due their inheritance and what should happen. And they ended up getting their part of the inheritance. So that really definitely taught me that I need to be able to speak up when things are out of order, or when I know something isn't right, but there's no law or clause in place, or there's no parameters in place. I could be the one to end up shifting the paradigms and creating the laws or the parameters, as long as I'm well informed about what I'm speaking about. Again, these women were well informed. They went in. This is the law. It makes no provisions for us, but we believe we're due this. And boom, they got the inheritance. The second woman that I'm going to speak about that had me thinking about inheritance is Hagar. Now, Hagar was Sarai, who was later renamed Sarah, but she was Sarai's Egyptian slave. Now, the story of Hagar is told in Genesis 16, and then some is in Genesis 21. So I'm going to read you the beginning of Genesis 16, verses 1 through 4 NIV, just so you can have some backstory. Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan for 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. So here, Sarai decided to take matters in her own hands at the expense of her slave woman, Hagar, and give her husband a child through Hagar. So she, you know, she decided to get involved and do what she wasn't sure God was going to do. She wasn't sure if God was going to allow her to bear a child, because up until that point, she hadn't been able to. So she decided, let me take matters into my own hands, and I'm going to give my husband the family that I think he deserves, because again, I don't think God is going to do it. So she ended up again giving Hagar to her husband. Now, after Hagar did it and then found out she was pregnant, she ended up despising Sarai. And, you know, that got me to thinking, how many times have I decided that I would help, in quotes, God along, or felt like I wasn't hearing anything? Lord, I'm not hearing anything in regards to what I want to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and just implement my own plan. You know, how many times have I done that in my life? You know, I can think about times in my marriage when I felt like I needed to go ahead and put a plan in place. And instead of waiting on God, no matter how long it felt like I was waiting, I decided I would just go to Corey, almost like Sarai. And while I for sure, wasn't offering up any other women, I did tell him my plan, as Sarai told Abram, because she didn't ask him, she told him. So I would tell Corey my plan, and I just wanted him to follow along how Abram followed along, you know, with Sarai's plan. And let me tell you, those plans, I'm going to be transparent enough to say they didn't always work out how I thought they would, how I thought they should. And the result didn't just affect me. It affected him too. And certain things can cause resentment, you know, in relationships. They can build resentment and quite honestly cause relationships to change. So I'm grateful that, you know, any resentment that we may or may not have had with each other because of me inserting myself in a plan that God had already figured out, but that I felt, you know, was taking too long, you know, we no longer have any resentment on either of our parts. Again, although it could have been lasting. And going back to Sarai and Hagar, look at how Hagar started despising Sarai after she found out she was pregnant, after Sarah had offered her up and said, basically, hey, I need you to sleep with my husband because he's due an heir. And then after she did it, resentment started building up and their relationship changed. Verse 5-6 proves this. It says, then Sarai said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your slave is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. So when I read those verses, I started thinking, you know, here again, Sarai came up with this plan because she felt God wasn't coming through fast enough. So she involved two others in her plan, which were Abram and Hagar, and the plan hurt some of the people that she involved, not God, that she had involved, you know, and it hurt them so much so that it caused Hagar to run away. And Hagar ran away pregnant with Abraham's seed and with nothing. And then, so, you know, I started wondering how many times I was put in the world's plan. And when it didn't go as they wanted, I was the one who suffered on the end, you know, all because I went along with it like Hagar, thinking I didn't have a choice. So I had to go along with whatever plan, you know, had been come up with. And I was the one who suffered. You know, I started thinking that if I had felt that way, I'm sure there are listeners who are listening who may be feeling that way now or have felt that way in the past, that they've been just put in this plan that they had no desire to be put in. And now they're affected. You know, they're affected by somebody else putting them in a plan that God didn't plan out for them or for their life. And if any of you guys listening are feeling that way, you know, I want you to take hope in verses 7 through 11 of the same chapter, which reads, "The angel of the Lord found Hagar," because remember, she ran away. "The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was in the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress Sarai,' she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' The angel added, 'I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count.' The angel of the Lord also said to her, 'You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery.'" Then verse 13 reads, "She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees me.' For she said, 'I have now seen the one who sees me.'" So fast forward 14 years. Okay, let's move forward 14 years. And Sarai has now been renamed Sarah, and Abram has been renamed Abraham. And now they have a son, the same son that 14 years earlier, Sarah, who was then Sarai, thought would never come. She finally got her son. And now Hagar was still back there living with Abraham and with Sarah, because remember, the Lord told her to go back and submit to her. So Hagar was still there with her son Ishmael. Now, she went back there and she had to live back there with her son for 14 years, her son being the only heir until Sarah became pregnant. So imagine how that must have felt. I mean, how many times have you had to go back and submit to the thing that caused you pain in the first place? How many times have you had to go back and submit to the very people that put you in the predicament in the first place and caused you pain, but you still had to go back and submit, even feeling like an outcast? You had to go back and swallow your pride because God told you that you had to, and you had to be obedient. But out of that, God also showed you that when he sent you back there to submit to the very ones who hurt you, he showed you that he saw you, really saw you, and you just had to trust that he would cover you and keep you together while in the middle of a situation that you had never chose to be in the first place. You know, so I really started thinking about that, like, man, in life that has happened so many times. I've had to go back, submit in a situation that, again, I didn't cause, but I had to trust that God would protect me and cover me in that situation. And then I'm going to read y'all a little bit more, because there's more to that story. If you follow me over to Genesis 21 verses 8 through 20, NIV, that reads, "The child grew and was weaned. And on the day Isaac was weaned," which is Sarah's child that she was eventually able to have, "on the day that Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking. And she said to Abraham, 'Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac.' The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, 'Do not be distressed about the boy and your slave woman. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. I will make the son of the slave into a nation also, because he is your offspring.' Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered into the desert of Beersheba. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down about a bow's shot away, for she thought, 'I cannot watch my boy die.' And she sat there and she began to sob. God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, 'What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation.' Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. While he was living in the desert of Paran, his mother got him a wife from Egypt. So in that second passage, Hagar, again, was sent away by Sarah. So Sarah drove her away once again because Sarah couldn't handle the jealousy about a situation that she had then caused. And she wanted to just do away with Hagar and Ishmael because she didn't want to be reminded of them. And she didn't want Ishmael to receive any of the inheritance that was rightfully his. He was due that inheritance because he was the son of Abraham, just like Isaac. She didn't want her son Isaac to have to split the inheritance with Ishmael because by rights, again, Ishmael was entitled to that. But in that, look at how God shows up for Hagar and protected her twice from Sarah's hatred by sending an angel and providing for her and making Ishmael himself into a great nation. And eventually, Hagar lived as a free woman. She was no longer a slave. And again, Ishmael was made into his own great nation. So now I want to just encourage you, butterflies, that there may be times in your life, I mean, it could be now, it could be something you went through in the past, that you're going to feel challenged about what is rightfully yours, about what you are due and what you know that God has promised you. But I want you to know that just like in the case of Zelophehad's daughters and Hagar and Ishmael, God sees you and he hears you and he hears your cry and he hears the cries of your children, and he will make sure that everything that has been promised to you will come to pass, and the inheritance that is due to you, you will receive. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and listening to Tales from a Butterfly, episode 58. So go to either iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Spotify, or any other place that podcasts can be found and type in Tales from a Butterfly and subscribe to the podcast. And please rate the podcast by clicking on the 5th star. For those of you with an iPhone, it takes less than 2 minutes. If you don't have an iPhone, you can head on over to Stitcher, Stither, and do the same. And if you're feeling generous, please leave a comment also. Now, you can also listen in on Blueberry, BlueBrry.com. Now, when the Tales from a Butterfly directory pops up, click on the episode you want to listen to, and you'll be given options to subscribe to the podcast. The more ratings I get, again, the more visible the podcast, which in turn will bring in more sponsors. And that's really important, guys. Also, head on over to TariaShondell.com. T as in Tom, A-R-I-A-S-H-O-N-D-E-L-L.com to follow my blog by the same name, Tales from a Butterfly. And please, please share the episodes with your friends, families, coworkers. And also, please share the podcast on your social media platforms. And speaking of social media, you can follow me on Twitter at T.S. Faison, Instagram, T.S. Faison, and on Facebook at Tales from a Butterfly. And guys, no matter what you go through this week, no matter who is trying to block you from receiving everything that God has for you, keep going, keep pushing, keep fighting, and think on Colossians 3, verses 23 through 24 NIV. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Fly on, butterflies. I love you guys, and thanks for listening.